The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Sobro Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. We got an awful lot to get to today. Brock Heward's going to join me at 12:30. And we'll talk about that Seahawk game yesterday. But man, oh man, we got a lot of news that we have to get to. So let's jump right into The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
When are our public officials going to start cleaning things up around here? When's it going to happen? Because are you watching what's going on our streets? Are you seeing how people are coming here from out of town, from out of state? Because of our drug laws, because we have the weakest drug laws in the United States of America, we have the weakest laws about people who are on the streets, homeless, vagrants. We've had so many stories. Our friend Kelly Herron, who was brutally raped at Golden Gardens, or no, she wasn't raped. He was trying to brutally rape her, and she fought him off. She fought him with every fiber of her being, and she was able to hold off Gary Steiner. She put a pretty good beating on him. Gary Steiner moved here from Arizona. There was the brutal rape at the car dealership. Christopher Teal is the suspect in that. He moved here from Texas. All of these nonsense lies that our politicians are telling us. Oh, you got to spend more tax money. They're your neighbors. These homeless people are the people you grew up with. Now, they're coming here from all around the country because we have the weakest laws in the United States. We've legalized drugs in King and Snohomish counties. We allow street crime. Even the former mayor of San Francisco said they've allowed way too much street crime. Up in Bellingham, what happened yesterday is such a tragedy. Three people were assaulted by the same guy, including a 71-year-old man who had a fatal stab wound. He was just walking in a park Saturday morning. And a guy out of nowhere stabs this 71-year-old man in the chest. He bled out before police could arrive. A swarm of police officers, canine unit, tracked down 33-year-old Jesse Reyes. Jesse Reyes came to Washington from another state. We are attracting the dregs of the nation with our lack of any drug enforcement, with the fact that we've legalized heroin and meth in small amounts in King and Snohomish County. We do nothing about the street crime, the property crime. We allow property crime to go without any intervention, which is why we have the worst property crime stats of any major city in the country. And our politicians just keep going down the same merry path. We got people being raped and murdered all around Western Washington because we have attracted the dregs of the nation to our region. And this is on our politicians. And the beat goes on. And then, man, I tell you, you also have the leftist mobs, which are getting more and more violent.
The Big Lead, Dory Monson Show exclusive.
Well, we've had lots of stories around the country, around North America these days, of how if you do not fall in lockstep with the leftist mob, you are in some severe danger. Over at the University of Washington, right outside the hub a few days ago, there was a street preacher out there, as there were when I went to the University of Washington way back when. But things have changed on the old campus.
Bloody!
What the
fuck,
dude?
You ignorant!
What the
fuck? You ignorant bloody! You get off this campus right now! Why have you escorted off?
Nope.
You bloody fucking!
I
I will have you escorted off this campus for assaulting a woman.
Okay, they accused the street preacher of assaulting a woman when he was just grabbing back a sign that had been stolen from him. The street preacher is Anthony Parrish, and he joins us here on Cairo Radio. Hey, Anthony, good to talk to you.
Hey, you as well, Dory.
So tell me about your day at the University of Washington. What were your plans and intent for that day?
Well, I got off work early that day, and I was less than 10 minutes away from the University of Washington. I went there to preach, as I usually do, and it was around 12:20 p.m. I was preaching the death, burial, and resurrection of Jesus Christ. Class was letting out, and college students were flowing, and next thing you know, boom, someone hits me from behind. I didn't hit the ground, but my sign falls out of my hand. I have a 5x3 sign that's connected to a 12-foot painter's pole. So a guy picks up my painter's pole, runs through the yard with it. I chase after him. He drops the pole. I pick it up. I run back to where I was originally preaching, and a girl has a hold of my sign. So I grab my sign out of her hands, and she dramatically falls to the ground. The next thing you know, I have Willy Wonka and his Oompa Loompas all over my case, accusing me of assaulting a pregnant girl. So basically, they created this scene to try to shut me down through violence without any repercussions. As you can tell from the video, there's a lot of bad acting going on.
Yeah, no, it was almost like street theater by the guys who were attacking you, or an attempt at street theater. How long have you been preaching at the UW?
Oh, I'd say a couple years at least.
How bad has it gotten for guys like you who just don't walk in the, you know, with the leftist mob?
Oh, it's gotten really bad. This is the first time I was assaulted at the University of Washington. I've been spat upon many times that same day, as a matter of fact. I've had, a lot of property stolen from me, and it just keeps getting more violent.
What do you attribute that to, Anthony? Why do you think that things have gotten, because we're seeing this on the streets of Seattle. There was a pro-life woman who was roundhouse kicked by a guy up in Toronto that I had on my show last week. What do you attribute this to?
Well, I've started to see things get worse ever since Trump was elected. I would just say these people hate anyone and everyone that is not in step with their agenda. And these people are off the chain. They just will assault anyone that doesn't agree with them. As a matter of fact, the only time I've ever noticed Antifa was after Trump's election. And so I think that has a lot to do with it.
I would slightly disagree with you when you say they hate anyone who doesn't fit their agenda. I think what's really going on here, Anthony, is they hate themselves. And that they are filling this gigantic void in themselves with this trumped-up rage. And then it lashes out at anybody who doesn't think like them. But I just think more than ever, we have people with a gigantic void. And instead of filling it with something that'll make their life better, they've chosen to fill it with rage. And I don't even think they know why.
Okay. That's fair.
I mean, it's I just don't understand. I've talked about this so many times that, you know, there are a lot of elections that don't go my way. And I would not let something that's so far beyond my control, I wouldn't let it have such an outsized impact on my life. And the fact that so many people do, it suggests to me that there's really a psychological thing going on inside of a lot of people. So what do you do about this? Do you stop going to the U and preaching?
Well, I'm going to continue to go, but I'm going to make sure there's someone there with me to watch my back, perhaps recording the whole time while I'm there. So if anything goes down, we can get a different angle on camera. And that's what I'm going to have to start doing when I go out, even in the streets of Seattle, because things are getting more violent toward me. I've had people harass me, come to my place and slash my tires. I had to replace 7 tires. And so I just have to be more cautious and get some people to go out with me.
Yeah, I understand. Well, like I said, there were street preachers in Red Square and at the Hub when I went to the U 35 years ago. And some people stopped and listened, and most just kept on going. There was never a sense that somebody was going to just blindside, cheap shot them because they didn't like what they were preaching. And that's it's just amazing for me to watch what's happened to, you know, my campus, my city over these years.
Yeah, it's a sad thing.
Well, hang in there, Anthony. I appreciate you taking the time coming on with me today.
Hey, thanks for having me, Dory.
Okay. Anthony Parrish, who got blindsided at the University of Washington, up next in the Big Lead.
The Big Lead update.
And then the woman I mentioned in my conversation with Anthony, Marie-Claire Bissonnette, she was the pro-life person who was out on the streets of Toronto praying when this hipster guy came and delivered a roundhouse kick that hit this young woman right in the shoulder.
You want to kill him with kindness, remember?
That's right. What?
They actually had people filming you the whole time. Which is why I say kill with kindness.
Guess what? Hey.
Destruction of private property. It's against the law.
Somebody gets raped by somebody and they're like, I'm a 16-year-old and I can't have this baby. Think you should keep it?
It's a baby. Yeah. If someone was raped and she gave birth and she decided to kill her 3-year-old child.
I meant to get your phone!
And then he delivers a roundhouse kick to this young woman's shoulder.
Someone call the cops!
Meant to kick your phone.
Do not touch me! Someone call the cops!
Marie Claire came on my show last week. Tell me what happened to you out on the streets of Toronto there.
Okay, well, I was participating in Life Chain in the corner, a Toronto corner, mm-hmm. and I was actually helping out organizing it, and a man comes, and he started scribbling on two of our signs, and so I warned people to turn in their signs, and then he decided to scribble on people's backs, so he scribbled on 5 people's backs with a permanent marker, including a 10-year-old girl. Then he went over to a pro-choice protester who was there from the start, who wasn't making any big to-do, and he started telling her about the story of what he just did. I guess he was boasting and trying to get her approval, at which point I took out my camera or my phone to start recording him, mm-hmm. Should he continue to destroy a private property. And I said, that's destruction of private property, that's against the law. And then he proceeded to ask me about a hypothetical rape question, and I began to answer him. And while I was answering him, he took position, and then he roundhouse kicked me in the shoulder, which flung my phone out onto the ground.
Well, that man turned himself in over the weekend, 26-year-old Jordan Hunt. And he's in more trouble than I think I would have guessed. He has been charged with 8 counts of assault because of all of the destruction of property and destroying the clothing with permanent marker of so many of the people. But then also, he matches the description of back on August 2nd, there was a pro-life woman out on the street, and he tried to allegedly grabbed one of their signs and then pushed a woman into a pole. They had been searching for that person, and he matches the description, so he's been charged with 1 count of assault for that as well. So this is quite the guy. Shoves a woman into a pole, delivers a roundhouse kick to a woman, in both cases because the women were exercising their free speech. But this is the abject hatred of so many on the left right now. Man, we saw that after Kavanaugh got the votes he needed on Saturday.
The Big Lead, Bizarro World.
You're about the writer for Stephen Colbert's show, Ariel Dumas. Dumas, D-U-M-A-S, sorry, mispronounced it. Ariel, she sent out a tweet Saturday that said, whatever happens, I'm just glad we ruined Brett Kavanaugh's life. That was all they cared about. They just wanted to ruin a man's life. They weren't looking for justice. They weren't looking for righteousness. And then she sent out a non-apology apology that was even more pathetic. The last couple of weeks have been hard for the country and for me personally. The complexity of frustration, anger, and sadness can't be accurately conveyed on Twitter, and I regret my tone-deaf attempt at sarcasm in the wake of it. It's been hard on me personally, she said. A man falsely accused of rape. They try to destroy this man in front of his wife and his two daughters, and it was hard on her personally. Just such weakness, such absolute weakness. Then there were protesters who were pounding on the door of the Supreme Court. They're literally pounding and scratching this majestic wooden door on the front of the Supreme Court, like a bunch of two-year-olds. There's this woman. They said, well, we got to keep them away from the buildings. They wouldn't let them go up the steps of the Supreme Court. And this woman is talking to a cop. He's a young cop, Capitol Police, and he's just standing there having to listen to this woman blab on.
Mr. Hoffman, why is it you think we shouldn't be on the steps?
He's got his name on his uniform. It's Hoffman.
Mr. Hoffman, why can't we come on the steps? Why can't we come on the steps? Mr. Hoffman, why can't we come on the steps?
Mr. Hoffman, why is it you think we shouldn't be on the steps?
And this cop, he's just standing there looking off to the side, listening to this woman berate him because they've been given orders to keep them off the steps there. It's like they're like two-year-olds, these protesters. And then there was the elementary school teacher. Did you hear about that fine woman in Minnesota who went on Twitter and asked, who's going to take one for the team and kill Kavanaugh? Yeah, she was caught, outed very quickly by the internet. Her boss was called. They have put her on leave because a 20-something elementary school teacher was on Twitter asking who's going to kill Brett Kavanaugh. Tell you what. This is a wonderful group of people there. And again, not all leftists are bad and evil and crazy, but there is a disproportionate amount of that evil and crazy coming from the left right now. It's amazing to watch what's happening. That is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Woo! We need a little distraction from all of this. The Seahawks, good battle yesterday, came up short. Pete Carroll talked with Brock and Salk this morning, and Brock Heward will recap it all with us. The Monday Monster Quarterback coming up next.
Monday Monson Quarterback.
Blue in it. Check. Brown 24 Razor.
Brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy on Cairo Radio 97.3 FM, where the 12s hear the Hawks.
He's going to drop the ball underneath. The ball is caught. It's Jimmy Graham. And that was all Russell Wilson.
Here's Dory Monson.
It is Monday afternoon. That means it's time for our weekly visit with the Monday Monson Quarterback. And that would be Brock Heward, who joins us from Seahawks headquarters after an interesting conversation on your show with Pete Carroll this morning.
You know what, Dory? I think we all thought going into this season, if we played back these Monday morning quarterbacks, I don't know, in June and July, in a training camp, yeah, what's this team going to be? They don't have the superstars. You lose like six Pro Bowlers. Are they going to be conversational? Is it going to be topical? Are they going to be relevant? We're 5 weeks into the season, and I would argue that they have been the most fascinating group, and these games have been as fascinating as any first five games of any season these Seahawks have had.
Yeah, and yesterday I think most people thought the Rams were just going to come in here and blow out the Seahawks, and it turned out to be just as close as can be, and Pete Carroll talked about that with you guys this morning.
I think it was a big opportunity for us that we missed. Unfortunately, we had a chance to beat those guys here, get it done. The game was ours to be had. We could have done it about three or four different ways down the stretch. And in the fourth quarter, we weren't able to get that drive that we needed. We weren't able to get that stop we needed. Either way, we could have taken the game over. And it was a fantastic day at CenturyLink.
And you said something that I talked about in the postgame show, Brock. I went into an open-air suite because we're, you know, in that glassed-in press box. You can't really get the crowd noise. Mm. So for the last 2 minutes, I went into an open-air suite and just heard the noise. And for a season that had as many uncertainties, those fans were just berserk yesterday.
Yeah, and then listening to some of you guys' pregame show, you said it was as dominated by the Seahawks fan base. There wasn't selling all these tickets to Rams fans, even if there are Rams fans that were going to come up here, that it was really dominated by the 12s. The noise just discombobulated a really good team. Multiple false starts. They burned all their timeouts in the second half. And that was the 68,000 strong in full throat over the course of the game. And combined with the run game, that's the only reason it came down to the final couple minutes, because the defense struggled all day long, could not get many game-changing plays defensively. Offense ran the ball, play passed off of it, and it put themselves in a position for quite an ending.
And the Seahawks looked like they were in position for what would be a game-winning field goal, but then they get a bad holding penalty. And bad meaning, I just don't know how an official calls that there.
Yeah, well, it was into the teens. And I don't, you know, Coach kind of sharing some of that. Into the teens as far as the number of plays sent in for the league to look at on the other side with holding calls. On the other side was some of the things outside the frame. If you're going to let the boys play, and they let the boys play yesterday.
Yeah.
It was like Titus at his birthday party when I picked him up yesterday. Yeah, his new, like, basketball shoes caked in mud. They were in the corn maze. They were at the pumpkin patch. You know, he had mud all over him. I had just got the car washed. It didn't matter. The boys were going to play, and the boys played all game long. And in the final couple minutes, you decide to make the most critical call against DJ Fluker, who owned that battle with Ndamukong Suh, and that was unfortunate.
Yeah. Okay. So then the moment that Twitter just went crazy as soon as it happens. There's a minute 39 left. And Pete Carroll calls a timeout, last timeout. The Rams have their punter out on the field, and Twitter goes berserk saying, well, during that timeout, the Rams coach, Sean McVay, he had time to reconsider and go for it on fourth down, and that is what won them the game. It sealed the game. And I could not understand that criticism after the game. We spent a lot of time. Not one of my co-hosts disagreed with Pete Carroll's decision, and yet I'm looking at Twitter, Brock. It's just, it's crazy. It was just crazy.
Yeah, and the coach couldn't understand it this morning. You know, we were kind of walking through it, and he's like, well, who's they?
Oh, right? I got that right here.
Yeah. They would argue and say, put the burden on them. They have zero timeouts. Right, they are in that moment there. They have no timeouts whatsoever. So at least let them see what they're going to. This is the argument, and I know this is all happening in real time, and it's a lot easier to talk through all of this stuff now. But their argument would be put the burden and responsibility on them.
Who are we talking about? This ever-pervading they?
Oh, you know, just some of the folks out there, some of those in the analytical world or some of those that have an opinion, and just kind of evaluate that situation and say, why not put the burden on them? Their punt team was out there, and see if they're going to stay with the punt team.
They were already their players were winding the clock. Mm. They knew. Their guys that were on the field were giving the wind the clock signal to their punt team guys, to the officials. They already knew what was going on.
Pete sounds completely exasperated with you right there, Brock.
Yeah. Well, I'm trying to speak for those masses out there, Dory. That's what you do when you have these headsets on, okay? You try to present the other side as much as you possibly can, right?
Yeah.
It's what I say to Molly. I had the same exasperation with Molly. And I don't know why I'm sharing family stories today, but Titus's mud-caked shoes. And Molly will come home with something and be like, well, they say this is in. This is in. Like, this is the fashion thing. Like, who is they? Who are the fashionistas? Is it someone in Italy? Just tell me who they are that decides what is in and what colors are in and what styles are in and what my suit should look like and what colors of ties. And who are the they out there that help make those decisions?
Okay, but in this case, they are wrong.
They, you know what? I'm not going to say it's 100% wrong, Dory. I can't say that unequivocally. Now, in real time, I call the timeout as well. I do exactly what Pete did in the real time moment. But I don't know if I can sit here Monday afternoon with you and say that's 100%. Because I think in that moment, if you wanted, and we asked Pete, end game, what did you want? What would you have rather had? You'd rather had them punt the ball.
Right.
That's what you would have rather had. Not have them sneak it and give Russell a chance and give Seabass a chance. So that's what you wanted. And they were on the field with the clock running and no timeouts. So at least, you know, at least see if they were going to play that out. And would they have run their team back on the field with 20 on that play clock and let 10 seconds go or 15 seconds go?
No. I think they punt the ball if Pete doesn't
let's
call
it wind
the timeout.
All the way down?
Yeah.
You get the ball with a minute and a timeout.
Yes, and inside the 10-yard line, because they have one of the two best punters in the league, and we get the ball. We have to go about 55, 60 yards to have a long field goal attempt in a minute three. With one timeout.
Yes.
I think that they punt the ball if we don't call the timeout. But you call the timeout, that's an unequivocal smart thing to do.
I don't know, Dory. I can't sit here and say that today. I don't think so. But I also can't sit here and say, I think it 10 seconds would have run off, and I think McVay, because they already asked for a second measurement. They were already debating it. The QB was standing right next to him. The whole O-line was still around him. I think they would have said, forget this. Get on the field. We're not punting the ball to Russell Wilson. And what, maybe 10 seconds or 15 seconds, you could run a QB sneak. You could have ran out there with 10 seconds on the play clock, and they would have run that QB sneak. So I'm not convinced they would have just punted that ball there. I'm not.
And here's the final word on that Pete had with you guys this morning.
Do you think they would have rushed their Goff and crew back on the field? Or do you think they were going to punt the ball?
They were thinking punt the ball if we let the clock run. But when we didn't let the clock run, I think that's what, you know, they were content to give us a minute three, you know, and with no timeouts and try to hold on to it, you know, the win.
Yeah, I just think the timeout changed the dynamic of the situation. It changed the decision-making process.
So you're really good at the old craps table, I've heard. I don't know. Maybe you used to be in your previous life. Mm-hmm. You used to be really good. And I think you even told me at one point, you can get craps down to what, about 2.6%?
Oh, no. I'm way under 1%.
Way under 1% advantage for the house. Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Under 1%. So are you telling me it's unequivocal in your mind, Dory, that you would much rather have them, you know, call timeout and take that situation versus them punting the ball and you getting it with a minute and a timeout?
All I know, I don't know football like you, but I compared it to basketball coaching. You have to make end of game decisions on timeouts, on when to foul, on where the shot clock is. And I felt like that was one of my strengths. Mm-hmm. I think that was something I was really good at instinctually. And instinctually, even though football's not as much my sport as basketball, instinctually, everybody did everything right, including the Rams coach. I think that was a really gutsy call to go for it on fourth down.
Yep.
I think the timeout was the right call, and we just lost the game.
Yeah.
I think
a lot of that is right, and it's so much easier now. And I said it's like, you remember the movie Sully, where he lands a plane on the Hudson? And it was a great movie. Did you end up seeing the movie?
No.
Okay, we got a long trip to London. So
yeah, and I don't know if I want to talk about plane crash movies right before I go to London, but go ahead.
No, well, they all survived, so it was a wonderful story. But I think that there's a pretty good comparison. I'll leave it at that because, you know, we can all see this a little bit differently. I think there's just a little bit of gray. But in that movie, Soli had just a little bit to make a decision. Once the birds flew in, his engines were out. He had a decision to make, right? Do we turn around or do we, you know, plan B and land it somewhere else? And they have to factor, right? They have to have some real time, 5 seconds, 10 seconds, whatever it is. And the TSA came back and for a long time was trying to hammer him that you need to turn around. That every one of their models said, if you turn it around, you would have landed it. Turn it around, you would have landed it. See, we show it and they have all these models to do it. But it never factored in the human element of the real time that it takes to make that decision.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't just make that decision in 3 seconds and go, oh, turn it around. You have to process everything. And I think in that moment there, it's so easy to sit in these seats or sit in the Twitter world and say, oh, absolutely, real time, you do this, versus, hold on a second, you know, they've got to process all of it. And Pete in the processing was not going to let 36 seconds come off the clock.
Yeah.
So I get it.
Well, It's a shame because that would have been a signature win for those boys. But they get to go to London, take on Marshawn and the Raiders. They're not very good, so maybe get back to 500 and come home still with a shot at things.
Well, I know this. When we chat, it's going to be interesting because it's been every single week this year. There have been storylines galore, yep. And I think they will continue to be so.
I agree. All right, good stuff, Brock. I appreciate it.
You got it, Dory.
Brock Huard is the Monday Monson quarterback, brought to you by IRG Physical and Hand Therapy. And I'd love to know what you think about this. You can text me on the Online Trading Academy text line, 98973. That's 98973. Lots more straight ahead as the Dory Monson Show
rolls on.
Take it away.
Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on, rolls on. Timeout. Rolls on, rolls on, rolls on. Mm-hmm.
Man, there is an amazing article up at CNN.com because CNN as a company has spent the last 3 years trying to destroy Donald Trump and his presidency. But CNN today has a story headlined President Donald Trump's winning streak. Donald Trump may have never had a better time being president. It's only a re-election party on the night of November 3rd, 2020 could possibly offer the same vindication for America's most unconventional commander-in-chief. And they talked about how he's road testing his re-election message at all these rallies for the midterms. They called him a president of consequence. He has reshaped the Supreme Court exactly as he promised he would when he was campaigning for 2016. They talk about the economy. Last week, the unemployment rate hit the lowest number since 1969. Soaring stock market. Unemployment is pretty much non-existent. There are more jobs available than people looking for jobs. And, I mean, for me, there are only two things that President Trump needs to do to become, I'm going to make people's heads explode here, to become a truly great president. He has to reduce the deficit. Because if you're building this economy on trillions in debt, and we've added another trillion in debt since he took over, and he's got to use the GDP increase. He's got to start lowering the nation's debt because $21 trillion is going to cripple. It's dangerous for us as a nation. And he has to build the wall. But on everything else, he's been doing exactly what he campaigned on. And then he loves trolling his haters, especially here in the Puget Sound area. We don't celebrate Columbus Day. October 8th used to be Columbus Day, but now it's Indigenous Peoples Day because Christopher Columbus was a thieving murderer. So Donald Trump this morning sent out a text or a tweet. Christopher Columbus's spirit of determination and adventure has provided inspiration to generations of Americans. On Columbus Day, we honor his remarkable accomplishments as a navigator and celebrate his voyage into the unknown expanse of the Atlantic Ocean. So while everybody on the left is, Christopher Columbus is a horrible, evil person, we shouldn't have Columbus Day, of course, Trump decides to troll all of them with a tweet celebrating Columbus. But when CNN says he's on a winning streak, best 15's next.